we'd spoken about the relationship of God and the world as the world not being viable without God, God being viable without the world, and so on. Towards the end of Gimel, if you notice, there are two dots. This edition of the Rambam is a very good edition of the Rambam. It's called Frankly. He put a lot of work in it. Somebody put all of his money in his lifetime into working on it and put a phenomenal edition of Rambam out. He used a lot of manuscripts and redid everything. And actually, he's one of the few people that succeeded in having a real memorial. It's called Frank Rambam. It's Frankel. He died about 2-3 years ago.
Frankel.
And he was a Talmud Chacham, a Rav in New York who was well-to-do. And actually had the foresight, he decided he wants a memorial. He unfortunately did not have his own children. So he wanted a memorial for himself, and he said, let's do the Rambam. So he put all his money, plus got money from other people also, but it was mainly his life investment. He put a staff, about 30 people, who sat for years, and they worked with dozens of manuscripts, and they redid both the Rambam, all the Mefarshim. On the side he put in extra Makoros. In the back, he put in a collection of Farshim. It's really somebody who, yeah. I mean, had a lot of Siyata Shmaya and knew what to do. He really did a great job. This is almost the last final that came out, actually. He left this one for the last. He left the four most important ones for last. I guess it was a teaser of sorts. Now, one of the things that he did, which is important, the numbers we have for the Rambam, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the halachos, unfortunately are not 100% faithful to the original. They don't always start or stop where the Rambam start or stop the halacha. So, thanks a lot. So what he did was, he tried very hard not to tamper with the original, but to add it. So those two dots that you see over there are really where the Rambam should be finishing. Those two dots are where it really is the end of the halacha. But he left the Gimel, Daled, and Hey where it was traditionally, so that people, A, don't mix it up, and B, they don't accuse him of trying to redo things. So but it's very helpful, because sometimes the fact that a half a sentence got cut off and put into wrong halacha changes a lot. It's one of the areas, in this case, it's very helpful also. So let's start from those two dots.
There's something in your coffee, I don't know what that is.
It's a bubble.
There's something in there.
Well, it's natural grass.
Oh, okay.
it's natural, right?
Just wanted to make sure it wasn't natural. A critter that had long legs.
Okay. Lefikach, he says. Now he's going to define another term in relationship of God. Lefikach ein amitase kamitas echad mehem. His truth is not like the truth of any of this. This is what the prophet says, Va'ashem Elokim Emes. There is a pasuk in Yirmiyah. It says, Va'ashem Elokim Emes, that Hashem is a true God, which he takes to mean in this term, V'hu levado ha'emes, it means he himself is truth, V'ein la'acher emes kamitai, and nothing else is as true as his truth. I want to take some time to explain it, because it's a very important concept. The pasuk is Hashem Elokim Emes, which, even though it's three words, suffers at least two different explanations. What does the word Hashem Elokim Emes mean? One understanding is Hashem is the true Elokim. Hashem is sort of God's name describing God, period. So Hashem is Hashem. Elokim is God as he runs the world and Hashgacha and direct things. So when you say Hashem Elokim Emes, you mean to say of all the forces in the world, the real one pulling all the strings is God. That's one explanation. It's when we say on Yom Kippur Hashem Elokim Emes, Hashem Hu Elokim, we mean that in that sense. That God is the one who is the power. Elokim is the power, the force, the power, and Hashem Elokim Emes could mean that. That is one explanation. Some of the commentaries give it, it's a very reasonable and valid explanation. The Rambam is interpreting it differently. The Rambam is interpreting it, Hashem Elokim Emes means God the Almighty is the only truth in the world. And let me explain that, because he's using the word truth in a very special way. I think we spoke about it last time a little bit, but it's worth repeating it, because it is very important. The word true is, in a normal sense, we speak about something false, something that didn't happen, and so on. Something that is external to something that is intrinsic, for instance, a papier-mâché figure, horse, is a fake horse. Why is it fake? It kind of looks like a horse. It's got the shape of a horse and so on. But past the outer appearance, it's not a horse. If you take meat and carve it out to look like a horse, it's a little more true, but it's still not a horse because it's only the flesh. It doesn't got the kishkas of a horse. I don't know what the quality is, but still not the one of the I'll just say it all because it's not has a shalom for the content, but the word is very sharp. There was one of the big dolomos, or Sameach, who was a Litvak, and they say over his name, and again, it's just so sharp. It's he once said, you can fake every single profession in the world except for a Chassidish Rebbe. This was part of the ongoing, and he said, what does it mean? So he said, well, how do you fake being a doctor? You didn't study medicine, but you put on a white robe, or at least a little ID tag like Cliff has, and you watch around looking very important, and you've got a little stethoscope, so you look like a doctor, but you don't know anything about medicine. Or a person could be a fake construction guy, could put on a metal helmet and walk around with a thing and pretend he's in the construction business. So that's what he said. But a Rebbe says, as soon as you put on the garments, you are one. I only said it over for the sharpness of it. It's the sharpness of it is quite delightful. I have to call it the content of it. But I'm serious. It's just one of the very sharp.
I'm doing that across the street.
Right.
Listen, we keep milks and flesh separate. You know, the jokes for here, the jokes for there, you might try to substitute like Rosh Hashiva for Rebbe. You might actually get a few laughs over there.
I dress like a Rebbe. I'm in my house, not in the Chabad house.
I thought you meant the Chabad house. I thought you were going to repeat that to Chabad house. And
think of my own house.
That wouldn't have been a very smart idea. Okay. At any rate, so you have the idea of emes as being that which is substantially so or only exterior so. There's another place where the word emes is used in that context. I think it's very important. This I want to search for a foot as a chon of racha. When the Rishonim refer to Kabbalah, they call it Chachmas HaEmes, the true wisdom, the wisdom of truth. For instance, the Ramban will say a Pshat, and then he'll say Valpi Medrosho, how the medicines, and then he'll say Valderech HaEmes, and on the true Mahalach. Mm-hmm. So Rav Futna asked, what does it mean Derech HaEmes? So the other ones are Sheker? Like, what's the opposite of Emes? You're telling me the answer. I say I have two answers for you, and then the true answer is this and this. So basically, you're telling me
it's
other two are not what?
You can deal with this.
Yeah. Well, if somebody says this is the truth, I tell you two stories, and I'll tell you this is the truth. So obviously, the other ones are a lie. What does it mean? So Rav Futna explained it like this, and all of Kabbalah really is called Chachmas HaEmes. As he said, let's take an example. Somebody's going on a business trip. Somebody's going to New York. So you ask him, why go to New York? And he says, they've got some very good restaurants in New York. It's true, and it's true a person likes to eat. And there are also some stores where you can buy some real neat suits. And the person does actually go. But there is a business deal that is clinching with somebody. And that's the real reason. It doesn't mean that the other two reasons are not right, but it simply means that they are external to the main reason. The main reason, or the real reason, the motivation, the primary motivation was the deal that he's got to sign with somebody. And yes, he does like eating the kosher restaurants there, he does like buying the suits, but those are true, but not the truth in the sense of not hitting the nail on the head. So the relationship of that which is primary reason to that which is more external is emes, to lesser emes, or not called emes with that capital Aleph, so to speak. Therefore, when we're dealing with entities, that things are that are more of substance are called emes, versus things that are less of substance are not emes. So as far as Kabbalah goes, this is how Rav Futna explained it, all of the reasons that Rashi and Ramban gives are true reasons. But then Kabbalah is the primary reason, and everything else is sort of a way it describes itself. So sometimes, like, a person is a professional and sometimes lectures for someone who's a layman, so he's going to give little stories maybe, or little outside things, which are not wrong, but when you're trying to explain something, you'll what we call oversimplify. So an intrinsic Kabbalah seems to strike, this is the closest to the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu's set plan that he set out. As we try to understand it in terms that we can come to grips with, we hit home on things that makes more sense to us, but are by nature less core and more outside. So if we explain a reason for not doing certain averis or doing certain mitzvahs in terms that make sense to us, they are true, but it's not the most precise way to hit home at exactly for the reason for it. So that's Chochmas HaEmes versus things that are not Chochmas HaEmes. The same thing here also. Emes, in the sense that the Rambam uses, means absolute. Truth is an absolute quality. The word emes, the way it's said, is something which is absolutely so. It's built around a Gemara. The Gemara says that a note fell min Hashemayim when they tried to destroy the Avodah Zarah. They tried to destroy the Yitzhar of Avodah Zarah and the Yitzhar of Arayas. A note fell down min Hashemayim, and it was signed with God's name. You know, God, so to speak, signed it. The signature was emes. A very famous Chazal, God's signature imprimatur is Emes. What does that mean? It means that when a person writes a letter, that is, those are certain facts. I'm interested in your health, how are you? I'd like to ask you to send me this. I'm very curious about that. Those are all points and different areas that I'm expressing. When I sign, that's me. That is, so to speak, core. My name is everything I am and all that I am. Those things that I wrote are particular points. There's more to me than what's in the letter. But when I sign it, that's me. The middos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are his middos. There's chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's din of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and so on. Those are all different areas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu expressing himself and functioning in the world, interacting with us. But when we deal with a midah that is Hashem itself, it's emes. In other words, the pure standard of absoluteness in the world is Hashem. And that's why it's called emes. Everything else, it compares to it, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is emes in its own right. That is the expression of God's signature being true. So the Rambam says, when we're dealing with absolutes, the only absolute in the world is Hashem. And therefore, everything else, to some degree, I cannot understand its existence as being emes. It's got some bowed existence, it's got something going for it, but it's not an absolute being. So if we're describing a description of God that is absolute, we don't do as much chesed as Kadosh Baruch Hu, but that's a quantitative difference. Kadosh Baruch Hu does infinite amount of chesed, we do a tiny bit of chesed. But there's what to compare. It's a lot with a little. In absoluteness, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, and we're not. And it's a very important theme on Rosh Hashanah, for instance. We say Hashem, Ke'atel, Kim Emes, or Dvorcha Emes. All of those terms describing God as Emes, we're not describing that he doesn't lie, Chas v'Shalom. I mean, that's not a great description even for a person. Lying and telling the truth is what you expect of a person. We're talking about Hashem as being an extraordinary, as being the reality itself. Emes, in its absolute terms, is reality. There's one more thing that possibly, is there a Tanakh over here? Is there a Yirmiyah, actually, specifically? Or
in the Shul?
Yeah, he'll get one. The white one.
In the pasuk that the Rambam quotes, there are actually two more significant factors, and okay, thanks. Oh, it's a big one here. Yirmiyah has some very sharp words. Vashem Elikim Emes. Hashem is the true God, or Hashem God is true. He actually, they translate that, but Hashem God is true. Fine. Hu Elikim Chayim, he's a living God. Umelech Olam, and an eternal God. That he did not tame lahoim. You should tell the goyim alakaya deshmaya va'arka loy avadu, the God who did not make heavens and earth, yevadu me'aro mitchasha elo, will be lost from under this earth and the sky. In other words, the God that did not create heavens and earth will become destroyed. That's the flow of the sentence. Let's explain it. The Gemara says on this the following. Hashem Elokim Emes, God is the truth God. Why? In other words, the Gemara interjects, why? Because, Hu Elokim Chaim, he's living, Umelech Olam and eternal. That's what the Gemara says. V'lama? I won't explain it because there are two things here that are associated with Emes that are very important. Chaim and Melech Olam. I want to explain it. He says, why is God the true God? Because he's a living God, and because he's an eternal God. Let's take the first point, the living God. This is a Maral. The Maral says the following about tzaddikim are called living. I think we mentioned last time that tzaddikim are called living, even when the dead are called living, and Rishayim are called dead even alive, and tzaddikim are called alive even when they're dead. So briefly, to say over what we said last time, the Maral says something living is unique in that it creates its own life source. A rock will sit out in the rain until a rock is very strong, but the rain will wear it down, the wind will carry it away, and it'll slowly fall apart. The only direction it's going is downhill. This is sort of the general idea of entropy. Everything sort of runs downhill. Living elements are sort of the opposite of it. A living being creates itself. It gives its own food, its own shelter, protects itself, breeds itself, and it almost seems to be the opposite direction of entropy. It is one of those issues that evolutionists contend with, is why is not life the opposite of entropy? It's going the other direction. You're constantly building, and one of the puzzles is, so why do we die? If we keep renewing ourselves, and our body keep you know the answers. But that is the reality of it. Living beings sort of self-create themselves. Obviously, they came from somewhere, but everything living seems to have the ability to create itself. So it's the description of something living is that to some degree the reason for its being lies within itself. That's A. On the other side, those things that are not intrinsic, the less something is intrinsic, the shorter living it is. For instance, I have certain things I want. I want A, I want B, I want C. C is kacha kacha. So if I don't have money, I don't buy C. If it gets neglected, I let it rust. Because it's not terribly important to me. B is more important to me, so I give it more attention. But if it falls away, it falls away. A is tremendously important to me, and if I lose it, I just despair and I get depressed, like people who, God forbid, become depressed because they lost something very important to them, whether one person's a person, one person's money, one person's a job, one person's it's honor, but things that are very intrinsic to a person. So the measure of how intrinsic something is to you is how long will it last. Something that lasts forever is the thing itself. Something that can fall away at some point is not essential. The word essential means both in English, correctly so. Essential meaning either the thing itself or absolutely necessary for its continuation. It is the same thing. If the only thing that's important to him is music, and the person, God forbid, turns deaf, he will just, he will depress out and just fade out. On the other hand, if it's a nice thing but not the most important thing, I can do without it. So you have two measurements, two sort of tests for things that are intrinsic, or the Hebrew atzmi, to things that are just sort of tag-ons. And one is, where does it come from? If something came about, if a table came about because I pasted it together, so it'll fall apart. If a tree grows organically together, it'll stay together. It's much more organic to it. So one test is, how long does it last? And the second one is, when did it get pasted on? Those things that I'm born with as a baby, the simple reflexes last forever. I mean, except for those that fall away at adulthood, but the knee reflex will last. Those things that you learn the first 2 years are very much part of you. Those things you learn in school, you forget kind of quickly. It's not something, because it got pasted onto it. So the more something comes from within, the more it's self-sustaining, then if a person has real musical talent and abilities, it'll be always part of him, because he replenishes it. It's not just lessons that he took in piano. It's something coming within him. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Emes, the Navi says, because he's Elohim Chaim, it is the living Elohim, as opposed to a God that was brought into being by some outside person, idea, or need. And it is also Elohim Olam, Elohim Olam. It's eternal. And that's what he says. Any God that came about under the skies and heaven, that did not supersede it, is going to fall away by definition. Because what brought you in is going to bring you out. If there's a cause for your being, then when that cause goes, you go. When there is causeless, when your beginning is you yourself, because you made yourself, so then nothing is going to take away from you. A person who's mediocre, and the only reason why he has a certain job is because someone gave it to him, so when his benefactor goes, he goes. On the other hand, a person who's a self-made man, so to speak, no one's going to fire him because he's self-made. He's his own talent created his job and his ability. So Hashem is Emes, and that's what the Yirmiyah says in the Pasuk, that he, because he's Elohim Chaim and Elohim Olam. Those are the two tests for Emes in the sense that the Rambam is using it for. It's also the reason why when we say Krishna, people just get so used to it that they don't notice it. It's not Hashem Elokechem Emes. That's not a Pasuk. Mm-hmm. The Pasuk is Hashem Elokim. The bracha starts Emes V'yatzev, or Emes V'emuna. But the halacha is, we don't want to separate Hashem Elokim from Emes. Mm-hmm. So we try to meld it together, and there's something so deep in it. When you learn it, say, oh, no, it's very nice to put them together. No. It's when you give a description that can be slapped onto somebody, so then you put a comma. Reuven, the doctor, the benefactor, the this, the that. Fine. There's a pause over there because there's the person and what he does, or what he has done, or what he can't do, and so on. But when you're talking about the description of the person himself, you don't want to pause over there, because that's very much part of the person. Hashem Elokim, the Nochem V'Kayam and Nechmad Noyim and Noyim, those are all descriptions. They can tolerate a pause. There's no problem with having a pause between Hashem and all the other things. Emes is a type of description that by its nature is describing God the essential. And that's why we don't want to have the pause there, because we want to read it as one run-on sentence. That's the halach of it. Okay, Vehu. He says, Shatora Meres Ein Od Milvado. Kloma Ein Shom Motsui Emes Milvado Kemoise. That he's dealing here with a pasuk. And it's bothered by a problem. It's a pasuk in the Torah, that Ein Od Milvado, that there is nothing but HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he's bothered, the Rambam, by a problem. There are other things. There are stones, there are rocks, there are people, there are malachim, there's Torah, there's Moshe, there's a lot of other things. So what does it mean? How do you translate Ein Od Milvado, there's nothing but Hashem? What does it mean? And the Rambam is unfortunately, we don't have all that many Pirushim in the Rambam on Chumash. We have a little bit. Somebody put out four volumes. It's called Rambam al Torah on Tanakh, collecting from the Rambam Pirushim. And it is fascinating sometimes the way the Rambam looked at Pesukim as well. The Rambam was bothered, how does one explain this pasuk to a child? There is nothing but him. Does it mean there are no gods but him? Ein Od Milvado means simply there's nothing but God. So the Rambam says it means this concept, that when we're talking about existence on a very essential level, then there is nothing else that exists but God. Eino Milvado, when you're dealing on a very, very essential level, that statement is as it stands. That's what the Rambam learns over here. Okay, so that is Halacha Dalit. Hey, let's see the next one. Hamotzi Hazeh. So at this point, we finished describing HaKadosh Baruch Hu as He is. And now there is another facet that completes our understanding of what God is. So we've described God as He is, essentially, the absolute existence, and nothing else has that same existence. And now he adds the next one. Hamotzi Hazeh Hu Elokai HaOlam Adoin Kol HaAretz. He is the God, or the ruler of the world. Elokai means the power, force of the world. Adon Kol HaAretz, and the master of the whole world. Meaning, describing a God the way we've done until now, where that is philosophically extremely, it's an extremely precise definition of something that is completely out of our realm of interaction, is only a half a description of God. And if somebody believes in that, he is an Epicurus, because that was basically the Greek type of approach, where they define God in every beautiful way, except his being connected with the world. I once heard, as a matter of fact, a beautiful Vartra of Hutna. Someone asked Rav Hutna, how come the American society, which is basically liberal and reasonably secular, don't hesitate to pronounce God's name, and God we trust, and God bless us, and God this, God that. You know, and there isn't that much resistance to it. So he said a very interesting point. He said, at the turn of the century, last century, there was a lot of monarchies were deposed. He said there were two directions on how to depose a king. One was the Russian example. You line them up and shoot them all. That was one approach to the problem of monarchy. And he said a second approach was the English approach, where you elevated the monarchy so above the world that it's not befitting that the queen decide where every nickel and dime goes. It's not befitting the queen decide about dirtying her hands in war. And nothing's befitting. So it's comfortable. You can live with a king that just lives in a palace. It's fine. It's livable also. So he said there were two directions on how to get rid of God. One was the Russian example. The Russians are consistent. They were, you know, they killed out the priest and the rest sent to Siberia and closed down the churches. And so it was fine. That was one model. The second model was they elevated religion should interfere in politics. I once read an editorial in the New York Times. This was a few years ago, I guess. O'Connor was still alive, and he came out with some statement about abortion, an anti-abortion statement. And he said that they wrote about him that he's such an important person, such a noble person, such a religious person. They're astonished a bit that he should mix into politics. And, you know, he should be above the fray and talk only about things that unite Americans and elevate Americans. And, you know, he shouldn't stick his nose into politics, you know, like abortion and stuff like that. So that was another model on how to get God out of the system. So there's no problem. You can live comfortably with a pope that doesn't tell you what to do. It's fine. No problem with that. So believing in a God that in by definition is not really connected to the world is not Muna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the second half of the definition is he is Elokei HaOlam, he is the driving force of the world, meaning that which is going on and happens in the world is his doing, and he's got the moral right, he is the moral force that obligates the world. That's Elokei HaOlam, means he's the driving, constantly involved force in the world. That's Elokei HaOlam. And Adon Kol HaAretz is, and he's the master of the world in the sense that he's got the moral, he is the moral obligator of the world. Now, Vehu, the Rambam says here a sort of description of HaKadosh Baruch Hu which is difficult for us to understand. And let me explain it, what he says, and where it's coming from, and the difficulties we have with it. until Newton came around, scientific thought, starting with Aristotle obviously, was that anything that is in motion needs a constant reason for it to be in motion. That was considered absolutely axiomatic. Nothing moves unless the engine moves it. So the understanding of motion as being constantly in the need of a force was axiomatic. A person stood on the earth, and even if everything was dead quiet, he looked up in the heavens, and he would see stars moving, sun moving, stars and moon moving. So there is constant motion. But it still wouldn't serve the Rambam. So I don't know. But this is the point that Rambam is making. It's not essential for the halacha part of it, but as a mushal, it's hard for us to understand. Let's see. V'hu hamanik hagalgal v'koach she'en lo keitz v'tachlis. He is the one that is turning the galgal with a force that has no end to it. Let me just explain what the word galgal means. It's a common term, also an ancient term, and as following. If you take a look, if you stand on the earth and you take a look at the stars and the heavens and the moon and the sun, and your mind hasn't been corrupted by science yet, you'll see they're moving. And if you're a little more observant, you'll be able to pick up patterns. In other words, the moon moves in its own pattern. Sun moves in its own pattern. Most of the stars move together as a group. There are four or five stars that you can make out with your own eyes that don't move as a group. They were called planets wanderers. They seem to march to their own beat. So, and they also seem to come at different distances. So the map that was current in those days was the world is the center, and there are wheels, whether real or imaginary, it doesn't make a difference. It's just sort of a group of things that move, and you can picture the moons obviously seem to be the closest, and the sun, and the planets, and the stars, and you could get a group of nine wheels, meaning in the sense bands of material that moves together. Whether they actually were embedded in the wheel or not, it didn't make a difference. That is called galgal, which means a wheel. Simply, just explaining the terminology of it. So, when a person looked up, he saw this constant motion of this huge band, the wheel, moving together. This force is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'amani galgal b'koach she'en lo keitz v'tachlis. B'koach she'en lo hefsik. And it's never stopping. Shagalgal sovev tomit. This wheel is constantly in motion. V'efshur sheyosov below misaviv. And it could not possibly move without somebody moving it. Now, if somebody wanted to, somebody could say the Rambam means the initial push. The problem with that is, once you're dealing with the initial push, so why does it deal with the initial creation? I mean, it's just as difficult to create the matter as it is the energy. So if I can think of something which at least gives us a picture that's true to what the Rambam meant and that we can live with, is the idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being the dynamic force in the world. In other words, there is one description that describes Hashem in terms of a static force. He created. Things in the world are His. But the ongoing interaction, that be God, is much harder. Just like for us, people are willing to admit that Hashem created us. That's one step of it. How did I come into being? There was a creator in some sense that brought me to being. But the ongoing interaction, activities a person does, that just hashkacha and a constant interaction, that's hard to understand. And on that the Rambam says that it is the motion, the ongoing motion is that point of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being that Dokel Aretz. So the Rambam has now completed his definition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One, the essential HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being absolute emes and being needing nothing outside of itself for its existence, everything else being the opposite, everything else having existence only because God deigned to give it existence. And second point is that there is an ongoing dynamic process which behind all the wheels, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that's turning it. Let's see Vav, which sort of caps it, it becomes a bottom line to it. The Yediyas Dover Zeh Mitzvah's essay. The knowledge of it is the kiyum of a mitzvah's essay. That is the fulfillment of a certain mitzvah. Shenemar Anoicha Hashem Elokecha. Many Rishonim argue, the problem with this is that every single mitzvah is written in terms of do this, do this, do that. Zochas Yom HaShavu Sekatsoi or Kabbalah Zavichah V'Simecha. The only mitzvah's essay, according to Rambam, that doesn't have that format is Anocha Hashem Elokecha. which raises the question, how could it be a mitzvah essay? Why is it a mitzvah essay if it doesn't have that format? It doesn't say that, it says Anoch Hashem Elokecha. So there are different explanations. First, let me say a Chassidish explanation, which is a Chiddush HaRim, which is really a beautiful explanation. Chiddush HaRim says the following. Torah is absolute truth. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave a Torah that says that you should put on tefillah, that a person should tie on tefillah, by definition, that statement allows for not tying on tefillah. Like if I tell you, would you please bring in this? So you're obviously saying that it's possible not to do it. By definition, you're saying, you know, there exists possibility not. So Bechira, the way in which a mitzvah was given kind of builds Bechira into it. Wear tzitzis, which means you could not wear tzitzis, and so on. The only mitzvah that's not given in that format is Emunah. Because Emunah was given to us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu planted it into the deep heart of every human being. Except that we have the ability to try to get out of it. We do have Bechira, but the Bechira is not tefillin, the Bechira is just we don't put on tefillin. That's that. We can absolutely not do tefillin. In a Jew's heart, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Anoch Hashem Elokecha, Emunah was there. And there's a lot of mishalom for it. I mean, Noah Weinberg has a few mishalom on it. Someone told me a story, and I'll just tell one story that I heard from someone personally. Somebody from the yeshiva was in Russia with a friend of his, and they were learning. They were running some sort of camp or something, and a middle-aged person walked in. And he said, where is this camp? So they said, you know, it's here and you can register. And he said, I'd like to be here for the next 6 weeks. He says, I want to tell you, I don't believe in anything. I'm an absolute atheist. But the deal is a good deal, you know. It's you know, for whatever it is. Yeah, food and lodging for a few weeks. It's a great deal. So one of the two people sitting there, and it's a takeoff a little bit from Noah's, I think, told him, you absolutely don't believe in anything? He said, no. So he pulls out $100 bill from his pocket. And those days, especially for the first years, it was $100, he said the person's eyes shut out. And he said, if you're a genuine atheist, I have no problem giving you this money. He said, what I need is, this is the Holy Synagogue, this is the Holy Aron Kodesh, I need you to stand in front of it and say, may GDHD strike my mother dead. And that's it. And the $100 is yours. Yeah. He couldn't. He pulled out another $100 bill from his pocket. He says, "We're making 200 now." He said, "200. There's absolutely nothing up there. Nothing. Those words make no difference whatsoever. Just say them, and $200 is yours." The person couldn't do it. He said, "Okay. So it means you're an agnostic." And now we'll start to work. But there is, and Rav Noach's marshal is always, of course, where you know somebody asks his son to say Kaddish, and the person said, the person told me he doesn't believe it all. So he said, so why did you say Kaddish? My father asked me. He said, if your father would have asked you to bang head against the wall, would you have done it? He said, no. Because you know down deep that that's a crazy thing, and you have to do crazy things with your father. This is something you want to run away from. You know, we have a certain passage that emunah is very deep in a person's heart. Except that we have a mechanism to be able to get away from it. We have a mechanism to hide it. We have a lot of mechanisms to cope, to give us Bechira. But down deep, it's something that's very deep in a person. So that's what the Chiddush HaRim says, and it's a beautiful explanation.
So why wouldn't you say that it's a mitzvah sloah, say? In other words, you're saying you already have it.
Well, as much as you uncover it and develop it, just like a person who has latent musical talent, it comes out by dealing with it. So the more we talk about Amunah, and the more we think about Amunah, and the more we learn about it, it develops. So the mitzvah's essay is
that it develops.
Right. Like the Rambam says, Ladas, to bring it to our conscience, to become aware of it, to bring our conscience, to fortify it. Different sheets about the right way to do it, but all of them are acts of strengthening.
And that's why it's written in this.
It's written in the format, because had it been written as a mitzvah essay, it means a person cannot believe. A person cannot not believe. A person can disregard his belief. That's the point of it. That's the Chiddush HaRim's pshat. A close enough corollary would be that the mitzvah is not to see it as a commandment. In other words, if a person believes, if a person does tefillin, every act that we do, l'moshel, the Gemara says, how can we blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Rosh says, l'mo taken. So Rosh says, l'mo taken? Rachmona matiku. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, blow. Like, what's the shayla? It's a mitzvah essay. And every time a person gets to do a mitzvah, the first thing he says, hini mochon v'zum l'kem. It's an essay. Shenemar. V'chal v'savoy t'vrach v'shem al-kecha. Fine. The right attitude is, step one is, I was told to do it by Kadosh Baruch Hu, and the reason for it is so on and so on and so forth. That is correct about all mitzvahs. But if a person believes in emunah only because I was told to believe, that's not a real kiyum emunah. The emunah was given not as a commandment, but as an understanding. So in as much as a person, as it becomes real to a person, and that's the lashon that we said constantly about leida and ladas, like we pointed out the Rambam, that he calls the mitzvah of it ladas. So the Rambam says, the yediyas davazeh, the awareness and understanding of it is a mitzvah's essay. So in as much as a person does activities that foster this understanding, it is... What?
You want some
more? No, I think I'm just enough to last till it's... In as much as a person does anything which fosters understanding, deepens it, deepens the awareness of it, that is the mitzvah's essay. So the mitzvah's essay is not to believe, which answers also the question of many mefarshim, how can you mandate belief? If a person doesn't believe, he doesn't believe. The Teretz is, we assume that down deep everyone has belief. The question is, how much is a person willing to develop it?
He also used the Lashon, Yediyah, is...
Yeah.
It's intrinsic to you.
Yediyah is, like we said last time when we spoke, the difference between Yediyah and Chachma Bina. Yediyah is a type of knowledge that's real. It's not theory, it's not knowledge divorced from, it's things that are gut instinct, gut feeling to you. Let's just finish off this halacha. V'chol amal al daitoi, sheyesha malakai acha chutz mizeh. If a person thinks there's some other force, oiva b'loi sasei. Shenema lo yilocha himachem opanai. There shall not be any other gods. Maybe we'll speak about it a little bit more next time. The kaf abeikar, he's denied the most important point. This is the base of emunah, like we explained. Shezehu ha'ikar gadol shakol toliboy. So besides a person being over a specific avera, in a certain sense, he has chopped the basis for everything else. There's a gemara that Rashi brings. I remember as a kid, I could never figure it out. Rashi says that melamed shekala over avodah zarah ki'ilu kafa b'chol ha'Torah kula. That somebody who worships avodah zarah is if he denies the whole Torah. And it's strange. Well, obviously, avodah zarah is the most terrible avera, and how could you deny it, and so on. What Rashi is saying is that all of Torah, it's not like this. There is tzedakah, which is very nice. There's tefillah, which is very nice. There is learning, which is very nice. There is lulav, which is very nice. And there's belief, which is very nice. But all the other acts still have a meaning. Tzedakah is goodness towards another person. Eating matzah on Pesach is important because it keeps our traditional history alive. Or, like, you know, the parts of Klai Yisrael that don't believe exactly the emunah, but still keep some traditions because they feel traditions have value of their own. The Rambam says this is the basis for everything else. And the Rambam says it also in Melachim. If somebody accepts the mitzvahs because he thinks they're great and wonderful, fantastic, he's not being the kind of mitzvahs. Mm-hmm. There's got to be, it stands on Torah and its mitzvahs stand on one basis. Like it says, V'chavakuk v'midah malachas, tzarek v'munaso yichya. All of Torah is, it's the Almighty, and he's got the moral right, and he's the moral absolute, and therefore what he says is intrinsically binding on us. And yes, they all have wonderful meanings. They're not given for nothing. This has chesed to it, and this has remembrance, and this has traditions, family. All of them are fine and good. But the Ikar HaGadol is, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Tzichem Rimetzayim. Okay, we'll hold it here.